Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed Podcast today. And today I have a gentleman calling in from Los Angeles. He is a major producer in the TV business. His name is Arthur Smith. Got a new book coming out. I want to welcome Arthur to the show. How are you doing, sir?
Good to see you, John. And great to be here. Looking forward to this.
And talking about being a producer, you said that Dick Clark brought you over here from Canada and kind of stayed here, been here over 30 years. And tell me a little bit about that thought process when that first happened and a guy like Dick Clark reaches out. What'd that make you feel like?
Well, the key word is reach, which is the name of the book that's coming out on June 6th, is now available everywhere for pre-order. See how I got my plug in early?
That's great.
You know, my life and my career has, you know, been a series of reaches. And that's what inspired me to write the book. You know, I had a lot of early breaks in my life. But when I was very young, I kind of subconsciously learned the power of reach, the power of extending yourself. And I kind of applied to it. Like I said, applied that power of reach throughout my life. And when I talk about it, it's like, I believe when you reach, you find out what you're capable of. When you reach, you realize the difference between a pipe dream and what you haven't dared to try just yet. So prior to getting that phone call from Dick Clark, I had a crazy run in Canada where I started producing and directing when I was 22 years old. So there's a whole story about that in the book. You know, I produced the Los Angeles Olympics when I was 24 years old and had spent, you know, 3 months in LA. And I said, someday I'll be back. And I don't know how, I don't know, but I really liked LA. And it was great because when I was doing the Olympics, I wasn't a tourist. I was actually working in LA. So I kind of got the feel of it. And then somehow after the Olympics, I had this crazy, you have to have mentors in your life. I had a mentor at the CBC, which was where I was working, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And they made me president of the sports division. I was 28 years old. And talk about a reach. Talk about like, I knew something about producing, but you know, when you're running a sports division, there's a lot more that comes with that job and negotiating contracts and marketing and PR. But, I had people who believed in me. It started to get a lot of attention and I started to get restless, which is me by nature. And I decided that I wanted to get out of sports programming. And I was actually on a survey for the Winter Olympics in France for CBC. And I was looking at companies in Hollywood that I felt like would be a good transitional job for me. And I wrote this letter in the middle of the night in France to Dick Clark. And it was a 5-page rant of a letter. And he wrote me back. And he said, I'm really impressed with what you've done. And I'd like to meet you. And I flew down to LA. And Dick and I spent 2 hours together, which was the longest meeting I ever had with Dick Clark after that. And he goes, I have no idea what to do with you, but I really like you. And he called me the next morning. He says, I'm going to call you in 3 weeks. And it was weird. I got a message. I never forget getting the message on my answering machine that, you know, it's Dick Clark, that unmistakable voice. And he said, I'm creating a job for you. I want you to come down here and help me grow my business. I know you want to do other things besides sports. Yeah, I moved here in March of 1990 and Dick was a great mentor. And I've got a ton of Dick Clark stories. It was funny because Dick told me a story years later where he said that, you know, when I was asking around about you, I called one of my friends in Canada, someone who distributed all our programming, this guy by the name of Harold Greenberg, who owned a number of Canadian cable channels and was kind of like a mogul in Canada. He actually produced movies like Porky's. But anyhow, Harold Greenberg was this guy. And Dick called Harold. He goes, you know about this guy, Arthur Smith? And Harold said to Dick, I'm about to hire Arthur. I'm going to offer him a job. And Dick said, oh, thank you very much. And Dick called me and offered me the job. So that was kind of the impetus, I guess. And like I said, I had a great time with Dick and he was a great mentor and we did, you know, award shows and variety shows. And it really was my transition from Canada to the US and from sports to entertainment. Little did I know that I'd end up back in sports again, but that's a whole other story. So sorry, long answer.
When you think about the word reach, what does that mean to you? Because that's interesting to me that your book is called that. You think about reach. Is that having a positive mindset? What does that visually look like when you think about, you know, this direction, you know, you went with this book?
Well, to me, it's like reaching beyond what you think you can do to find out that you can actually do it. You know, it means about, to me, it means about extending yourself. And like I said, there was some, you know, I grew up a very, very, very shy kid. And I, you know, when I tell people about that, they find it very hard to believe because I'm kind of outgoing, very outgoing right now. And there was something that happened to me when I was younger. The story's in the book. You know, something happened to me and where I had to come out of my shell and I had no choice but to extend myself. And it was like a typical Canadian boy. It happened on the rink. It happened playing hockey. And it was so unusual for me to have this moment. And like I said, I subconsciously absorbed it and it just gave me confidence. And I started to extend myself. And then I realized the more I tried, the luckier I get, which is what I say this all the time. The more you try, the luckier you get. If you can visualize it, you can do it. Listen, when I look back on my career, it's filled with a lot of great moments. But, you know, I've had my disappointments and not everything always works out. But I always believe everything's meant to be. But the key to me is putting yourself out there, is not being afraid to make, not being afraid to be vulnerable, not being afraid to make mistakes, not being afraid of failure and reaching. And yeah, that's well, what
it's a very linear process. Cause I have this ration. I'm a clairsentient where I like, however you perceive things, I'll perceive things times 20. Mm-hmm. So like if you're asked one question, I'm asked the other, I may respond a little more dramatically, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if you think about that, it's kind of linear to society because of this other rationale of understanding your subconscious and having I've been on this kick about a positive mindset. Mm-hmm. And people realizing that, you know, your subconscious is being programmed when we're born.
Correct.
And then we start responding to things in life with our unconscious bias. And if you can keep that programming positive, mm-hmm. It speaks to what you're saying. You know, things can play out how you want them to play out. And a lot of people don't understand that because that's why they never get the consciousness because right. They don't understand how deep that programming is. It may be very, very negative. There may be too much programming there. So actually, that's a very, very linear universal thought process, if you will, because to me, you seem like they call me the reluctant shaman as well. Reluctant shaman that I don't do the reluctant shaman stuff, but I have those abilities.
Yeah.
I don't like sell that or anything.
Okay.
But I have those abilities. But to me, if you were doing like the Olympics at 24, you probably have like a very strong engineering mindset, mm-hmm. And rational mindset, I would think. Mm-hmm. Very high intelligence there. It's very, to get a response from Dick Clark.
Yeah,
that's huge to get that response. And, you know, when you look at doing a project, what is your like a passion project? What is your approach to doing a project? You take an idea mm-hmm. like you did Hell's Kitchen, correct? Before you did Hell's Kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, and produced that show. How did you think about that? And how did you frame that moving mm-hmm. forward mm-hmm. To get that show done?
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of different shows at our company, you know, from Hell's Kitchen to American Ninja Warrior to documentaries to docu-soaps, you know, we're everything in the nonfiction genre. The one thing I wasn't at the time was a foodie. So when Fox, we were doing a lot of business with Fox at the time, we had a show called Paradise Hotel and we did a show called The Swan and we had this great run at Fox. And the executive at Fox, Mike Darnell, had come to me and he said, I want you to take a look at this show. Chef who's doing a show in the UK called Hell's Kitchen. And I said, you know, a food show on network television? And I said, there had never been a food show on network television at that point. People had tried. Mark Burnett had The Restaurant, which lasted a couple of seasons, but not much else, you know, because on network television, you got to be broad. You got to pull in a big audience and it's not for foodies. So I said, I don't know, Mike, I'll watch it. So I watched the tape and I was blown away by Gordon. I was blown away by Gordon Ramsay right away. I said, this is a special individual. He is compelling in everything that he does. But I didn't like the show. But I liked the title. I like Hell's Kitchen. I like Gordon. So I went to Mike and I told him that. I like the show. I like the title. He goes, what are you thinking? And I said, I don't know. But I said, I tell you what, we got to make this broad because I'm not a foodie. So I want, you know, we're on Fox, so we've got to find a way to not just appeal to foodies and make a cooking show. We need to make a show that other people connect to. I went into this little mode that I have where I just started to think about, you know, the way to broaden it out. And it was funny because there was one night I was actually sitting at a restaurant with my wife and it happened to be an open kitchen. And I was watching the chefs and I was watching them work their butts off and I was watching them getting yelled at. I was watching the expediting going on. And it was like a game. It was kind of like sports. I know sports. And I started, and I was like, and then I realized that, you know, this is a world that we need to tell people about with Gordon as the great master. And so we need to make a competition show where Gordon finds the next great star. And even if you're not a foodie, you can understand, you know, the appeal of, or relate to people fulfilling their dream. And so I went back to Mike and I said, we need to build a restaurant. We're going to have two kitchens and 80 robotic cameras. And, you know, he was looking at me like I had two heads. And then eventually he said, you know, that's pretty good. And then I said, well, what do I do next? He said, well, you have to make a deal with ITV because they own the rights to Gordon in America at that time. And then it happened. I'm always, when I start a project, to me, it's always about television that makes you feel something or content that makes you feel something. And you have to get vested in character. So that's the things that I look for. And for me, when I saw those chefs working and I was thinking about them, I was thinking about their lives and who they were as people. And they became, when I really looked at it, they were, you know, very admirable soldiers trying to deliver something. And I said, we need to understand who those people are. And that's kind of when it changed. And then, of course, when you combine Gordon Ramsay with that, you have something. I didn't know in 2004 whether we would get to 22 seasons, though. You know, it's been a great ride.
You said Mike Darnell. I think I pitched to Mike when he was doing American Idol. I think we went over there with Graydon and pitched in his office over there on the American Idol office. But that's a small world.
I know it well.
But when you come up with these hooks for these shows, that was always something. I was always a big picture. I could recognize talent. Mm-hmm. I could say, here's a big picture idea. But, you know, TV is about these hooks. How did you figure out hooks? You got to really figure out these hooks to be successful. And obviously you must be a master at doing that because it's very hard to get the networks in line with hooks and all these things. How did that thought process work for you?
Well, you know, I've always been I grew up as someone who, you know, was a student of television right from the very, very beginning. Television is my first love. You know, I've had, you know, two tours of duty in sports, CBC Sports, and later I ended up working at, you know, Fox Sports before starting my company. I was at Fox Sports for 4 years. I was head of programming and production, but television is my first love. So I've been a student of it for a long time. It's funny. Part of, you know, I appreciate what you were saying about like having it, you know, when you're doing an Olympics, you have to kind of have like an engineering kind of background, but some of my qualities that are not so good in my other life are really good for TV. I'm very OCD. I'm very impatient and I'm very restless. And so those qualities are good qualities that help me as a producer. Yeah, they make me a little challenged in my other life because I'm just a restless guy. You know, I believe in patient people get there faster. So I'm always in a hurry. There's a lot of analysis and you know, deep thinking. And the wonderful thing about, you know, Mike Darnell, who's a legend in our business, is he's kind of crazy like me. So we just analyze it and we beat it up and we challenge each other until we feel like we have something that's going to connect. But it always makes you feel. It always, you know, sometimes it's content that makes you mad. Sometimes it makes you sad. Sometimes it makes you happy, but it's not boring. It makes you feel something. You know, with Hells, we were able to dial into a format that was still authentic, but there's key foundational things that happen in every show, you know? And when I said it was like sports, that there is kind of a pregame, a game, and the postgame. The pregame is the preparation, the challenges, the buildup. Then there's the dinner service. That's the game. And then there's the post game, which is the fallout where they begin to analyze what they did and, you know, criticize each other or celebrate each other. And then Gordon ultimately decides what to do with it.
I guess when you understand that part, you said something about Mike Darnell there, I think is very important for some of these young people to understand, because I have this thing where, you know, I'm always trying to help people and no matter what it is, but my interest of helping may come off very direct, very strong, and may push young people back or whatever it is. And a lot of times I don't think young people, they don't respect, you know, authoritative or leaders or intellectual people. I don't think like maybe me and you would have respected people and kind of tried to emulate these people. I don't know where that disconnect is. And I think a lot of kids, whoever, whether you're trying to be a producer, actor, whatever it is, I think they try to make things look, because of that disconnect and not want to follow an intellectual person or leader, they kind of want to make everything perfect. And if young people understand it doesn't have to be perfect, like the top players like Mark Darnell and yourself aren't perfect. They're a little bit crazy. They're a little bit off. Those are the people who do great things. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, you have to sweat it out. You really have to sweat it out. And Mike challenged us. I always believed as a producer, my job was to tell the truth. So we would have these really good discussions. I wouldn't even call them battles, but these really, very passionate discussions about the show where no one gets offended and everything is, taken in the right way. And eventually you end up in a really good place. And I think what you're saying, and I do get what you're saying. It's like people really have to be open-minded and not be offended. And I think there's a lot of room that I believe that you can say anything to anybody as long as you're sincere and you're not attacking them personally. You're just talking about the work. It's like the way at our company, I've tried, and we've been doing it for 23 years, is that to create an environment where anybody can say anything to anybody and not be afraid to say something silly or whatever, because it's all good. It's all good. And sometimes the silly thing is the thing that you just take it back, you just tone it down a little bit, and all of a sudden you got genius. All of a sudden you've done something that you've never done before. And that's, that goes back to reaching, Hell's Kitchen, there had never been a successful network food show. And when I first...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Heard the notion. For Mike, I was like, I'm not sure I want to do this. I'm not a foodie and I don't know. He goes, watch the tape. And it was more like, schmuck, watch the tape. I went, okay. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized that there was something there. And then we built the foundation upon it. And American Ninja Warrior, which is, in our 15th season, which we're shooting right now, we're going to be on in June, was also a reach. They're, an obstacle course show in prime time on NBC. That makes no sense. But it's not an obstacle course show. It's not simply that. We look at the obstacle course on Ninja as a metaphor for life, and that the people who go on it, they're trying to conquer the course, but they're usually trying to overcome something in their own life. And that's why we talk, before they run on the course, we get you vested in who they are, invested in their story and what it means to them and the people around them. And that's as much of the show as the course, because if it was just an obstacle course show, it would work in prime time, not in a broadcast network. So, both of those shows, our two longest running shows, Hell's Kitchen, 22 seasons, and American Ninja Warrior, 15, and picked up for 16, on the surface, there wasn't anything like it before they became broadcast network shows. Now, of course, Gordon Ramsay's everywhere. Now, of course, there's other ninja type shows that people are trying to create. But being first is hard. Being first is really, really hard. This, John. I mean, it's, what you've done with comedy and some of the pioneering stuff that you've done. Being first is hard, because when you tell somebody about it, they look at you sideways, and you just have to pursue it, and you have to rationalize why it's going to work and why it's going to connect with people. And, the interesting thing about, Ninja was on a cable network. It was on G4. It's an accident how it became primetime on NBC. It was on G4. And as luck would have it for us, NBC, Comcast, which owned G4, E, Oxygen, had bought NBC Universal. And myself and the head of G4 went to NBC, and purely as an act of synergy, said, could you just put our finale on the air to throw a spotlight on our little cable show? And NBC says, well, we're not so sure. It's a male skewing network. And I said, you're missing it. You're missing what the show is. And they said, and after a lot of struggling, someone high above, because that's how synergy works, said, please put it on. And they actually put it on. They put it on the same night as Hell's Kitchen. It was crazy. We had Hell's Kitchen on Fox and American Ninja Warrior on NBC. And Hell's ran from 8 to 10 and Ninja ran from 9 to 11. And I wasn't worried about Hell's because Hell's had already been established. I was worried about this little show from G4 and what it was going to do. I just wanted to get a good rating. And we really worked hard on the stories about the people and, you know, to broaden it out as much as we could because we knew we were going on NBC. And as it turned out, you know, Hell's won the 8 o'clock hour and the 9 o'clock hour. And then Ninja finished in second to Hell's at 9. And then at 10, when Hell's wasn't on, Ninja finished in first. So we won every time period. Paul Telegdy, who was, you know, head of alternative at NBC at the time, you know, he called me, he goes, "Mr. Monday Night, you just won all the time periods," which was a great, great night. But it was also the opening that we needed for NBC to consider, you know, maybe we should put some of these ninja shows on NBC. And at first it was just a trial. They just put a few hours and the next year a few hours. And then eventually they took over the whole show. And we've been on NBC for, I don't know, 10 or 11 years, 15 years overall for the show. But by the way, you know, it's a big, broad family show, and it's, you know, it's not a male show. In fact, it's 51-49 women to men. And those are reaches, and those are, you know, sometimes you just have to try and take people along the journey that you believe in and be passionate about it. And, you know, for those two shows, it worked out. It doesn't always work out, but those are two examples of things that, you know, that we saw that we have to convince other people to see with us.
When you reach for talent.
Yes.
And, you know, television's why I was able to do what I do. I got pissed off at TV because I developed 1,000 shows and got 3 greenlit that went to pilot but never made series. So I developed a system and we changed how comedy did business in 2016 with Darren Knight, Southern Mama. And it had never been done. We took it Just for Laughs and 2 years from the trailer in the Talladega Night from the Talladega National Forest from one video that I found. So that's what I give the positivity from television. But when you talk about talent and you look at talent, mm-hmm. and I always, you know, I had this thought process in TV, you know, everybody had these great ideas. But the only time you ever really got any traction is when you had the right talent attached to an idea. Mm-hmm. What do you see in talent that gives you that green light effect? You know, because I always say, you know, a great talent, you ask them one question, they'll talk for 30 minutes. You know, what is your thought process on finding the right talent or reaching for the right talent?
Yeah, I mean, every project, you know, has different requirements. And, you know, a show like American Ninja Warrior, we went on with talent. You know, no one knew who Matt Eisman was at the time when, you know, when we started in the show. There were no famous faces on that show. It was the strength of the concept. But Matt was the perfect person to be on the show because he was such a great cheerleader. And he had this great, you know, beyond having a great voice, he had a great, you know, sense of humor, a great way to get us excited about the show. And then Akbar Baji Biamila, who's been with the show for 10 years, the two of them are, you know, they're the most passionate, you know, commentators you could have on something like this. The two of them, together, they really find the balance between being really good announcers and also being good cheerleaders at the time. And then we have Zuri Hall, who's also amazing, who does, you know, who's doing the interviews as well. So to answer your question in terms of, like, you know, finding the right talent, it so depends on the project. You know, it is someone who's going to bring it to life, which I think is what you may have been alluding to, was, you know, people like to have famous faces. People like to have, you know, people who are well known to bring, you know, some cachet or some marketing to your project. But we all know that every show, there's 4 key ingredients to a show. You know, one is concept. You know, what is your format? What's your concept? The other one is talent, is who is the talent. You have to have the right talent to match the right concept. The third one is execution, and you have to have the ability to execute. And then you have to have some freshness to your concept. You know, sometimes it's just a point of view. Sometimes it's just a different concept, but you have to have some freshness that you're offering something unique and something new. And to me, those 4 principles is what I look at no matter what genre we're doing, because they really apply to everything. Sometimes, you know, a great talent cannot save a format that's flawed or it's not well executed. And a great format great format can come crashing to its knees with the wrong talent. So you need everything working together. You need every combination of it working together. You know, in the book Reach, I talk about Dwayne Johnson and getting him to work with us on the Titan Games, which was a big reach for us because, you know, Dwayne's, you know, the biggest movie star in the world, and getting him to focus and be interested in, you know, this this athletic competition that we created, you know, took some work. But the one thing that when we were developing the idea, the more and more we developed the idea, the more and more we thought about Dwayne Johnson, and which was bad, because when you're thinking about one person and you can't get him out of your head. And but sometimes when you have a target, sometimes maybe it's easier to hit the target when you're so focused on that target. But the more and more we developed, the more and more we thought about the show, the more and more, you know, myself and the executives at NBC said, oh my God, this feels like a Dwayne Johnson project, because looking at what Dwayne does on social media with his hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of followers and his inspiring story and his whole, you know, theory about being the hardest worker in the room and blood, sweat, and respect and everything that he's done with his career, you know, this was the show where we're going to take ordinary people and make them into superheroes. And it felt like it was right for Dwayne. But, you know, that was our estimation. As it turned out, it was. And yeah. You know, it worked out. And, you know, I had a phenomenal time working with Dwayne. He is as amazing as you think he is. He's better than that. He's a great guy.
I just want to kind of separate two things. Something I caught on what you said about passion. Mm-hmm. And I do think there are celebrities out there that may be put on a project or be writing out a 20-year resume that bring no value to anything. Mm-hmm. So if you're out there listening, I don't think just because their name doesn't mean anything, because they have a 20-year resume and don't want to show up to work, you know, and that's going to cost you more money. But when you talk about passion or finding linear passion from the project through the personality, you know, I think that talent has to be passionate about what they're doing. It has to resonate with the project, with themselves. And I think that can stand out more than just a name.
So right. So true, John. Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it. I mean, you know, they have to play ball and want to play ball and be into the concept. If they're not, it's never going to work. And people can see through it. If it's just a paycheck, it ain't going to work.
And how do you, with this being the personality you are and being so successful, because I really, you know, it's so tough to play the game you play. What's the family do around Arthur Smith? What does Arthur reach for when the family's around?
Well, I will tell you, one of the things that I believe in is that it's easier to reach when you're reaching from a strong foundation. And that foundation was my parents. So who are no longer with us. They taught me, you know, right from wrong. I mean, my father always said, you know, that there's never the wrong time to do the right thing. And it's never the right time to do the wrong thing. You know, they were very good at, you know, giving their children confidence in themselves. And when you're reaching from a strong foundation, I mean, I use the analogy of, like, you know, when you're standing on a secure table and reaching for something, it's much easier to reach it's much easier to reach from that than reaching from something that's wobbly or not secure. And, you know, I was blessed with great parents. That doesn't mean that if you've had if you didn't have that in your life, that doesn't mean that you can't find a foundation with friends and families and other things and build on your foundation. But it, clearly for me, my parents made all their children feel like they were special and they should try and not be afraid. And that was very comforting through the years. So, and never to get too full of themselves if you have success, you know, and also, reach back and help others, which is another part of my reach philosophy. All the money that I'm getting from the book is going to a foundation that I set up called the Reach Foundation. It gives money to charities, to a select group of charities that lift people up in some way. I didn't write this book to make money. You know, for me personally, I wrote this book because I had this thing inside of me that I wanted to get out there. I wanted to, you know, inspire people, entertain them, because that's who I am. I'm an entertainer. But inspire them to take chances and to show by example with, I think, some interesting stories, you know, with some famous people and people that everybody knows. But the message is clear is that you only realize your full potential unless you reach beyond what you think you can do. And as far as my family life, going back to your question, sorry,
it's all good.
Tangents are us. That's me.
It's all good.
Thank you, John.
All good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have two daughters and a great wife. My wife and I are complete opposites. She is the,
men and women aren't supposed to get along, are you right?
Well, she is incredibly easygoing. patient, you know, relax, chill, and all the things that I'm not. And it works. It totally works. But I got to say, when I'm off work, I'm a lot more easygoing. You know, I'm simple family gatherings, being out with friends, going out for dinner, playing a little golf. That's the best for me. And you know, even though I've been living in LA, you know, most of my friends aren't in the business. Most of my friends are just in other jobs and stuff like that. Because when your friends are all in the business, as you know, John, it tends to get a little much, you know. It's because there's no escape from it. I like that my best friend's a broker and a real estate developer and a lawyer and an accountant. I like that because not that I don't love my entertainment friends, but sometimes I need a little break.
I don't know. I've had this rationale too. It speaks to what you just said. Is I think a lot of times in television, because it's such a exciting, it's exciting to be in the room. I think it's good for you to have those other people because that helps you define shows better because you know more about real life, because I think sometimes that environment can make people insulary and they make bad television.
I completely agree. And I'm always asking my friends and even when my kids were younger, and I asked my kids, what are you watching? What do you like to watch? Why do you like to watch it? Stuff like that. You gotta stay connected. You know, working in sports all those years, I have two daughters. I had two sisters. I've been surrounded by women my whole life. And I am a huge sports fan. And I've been surrounded by people who are not sports fan. And so when I was producing sports, my goal was to get them. My goal was to reach out and get them interested. And how did I do that? Storytelling. You know, one of the things that, you know, doing an Olympics and the thing that I learned, and of course I applied it later in life with Ninja and some of the other stuff that we do, is I probably have shot in my Olympic days 500 of those Olympic profiles. You know, the ones I'm talking about, John, the ones where you get to know the athletes and their story and you go to the hometown and why you care about them. And, you know, I realized that my wife and my daughters and my mom and my sisters, they all love sports movies. You know, they all love Rudy and, Miracle, The Rookie, you know, they all love sports movies. And what is it about the sports movie that they like? Because they were inspiring, that they were vested in the character, they cared about their journey, and they love watching the Olympics, you know? So even when I was working in sports, my goal was to get them to watch the show. Because if I got them, then I knew I had the sports fan, because the sports fan was watching it for the game.
If we want to find the book, where do we find the book?
Right now it's available for pre-order. So you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, Target, et cetera, et cetera. Or at the publisher, Blackstone Publishing. And it'll be out on June 6th, but you can pre-order it now. I really appreciate, John. This was a lot of fun.
Nice, nice. I appreciate you coming on the show. I really wanted to see some of my thought processes made sense to you. And I think some of these young talent out there that wants to be a producer, wants to get into television, whatever it is, don't assume anything, because I think if you read Mr. Smith's book, it could change those assumptions. So maybe if you're out there listening, go get that book and learn about the real life of being a TV producer.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it, man. It's good talking to you.
I know. It's fun, John. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your words and thank you for your support. Thank you for allowing me to get the message out there.
No worries. This has been producer Arthur Smith, and I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.